Hello, and welcome to the fourth episode of Caterpillar Nation. I'm Jill Kimball, licensed clinical social worker and private practice therapist. Caterpillar Nation is a growing community of people like you who are curious about the human experience. Follow me as we create a safe space to learn about mental health, mental illness, and mental wellness. We will explore the psychology of who we are and how we develop into our best mental health. Just like caterpillars who transform before becoming butterflies, we're also on a journey towards finding our best self. Stay tuned. On today's podcast, I'll be talking about trauma, different types of trauma, how people react differently to traumatic events, and trauma's impact on our body and mind. Not all people who are exposed to traumatic events or circumstances will go on to develop post-traumatic stress, but most of us will change through our exposure to trauma, and children are especially affected by their exposure to trauma. For more information about the impact of childhood trauma, I encourage you to check out the information from the Adverse Childhood Experiences Research, also known as ACEs. I'll be speaking more about that in a little bit. So, such a broad topic as trauma cannot be totally addressed in a 25-minute podcast. So, future episodes, I will continue to explore trauma, look for paths towards healing, and talk about healthy coping, and just understanding the impact of trauma. So trauma comes in a lot of different forms. What traumatizes one person might feel like intense stress to another person. The word trauma refers to a situation that is very threatening or life-altering. It can also be a series of threatening events, losses, and mistreatment. Trauma is always stressful, but not all stress is traumatic. So some of the different kinds of trauma can include complex trauma, which refers to disruption and traumatic events in a person's early life that contributes to their well-being as an adult. We might talk about incident-specific trauma. That might be like an assault or a car accident. It could be an experience in combat. However, often in combat, it's a series of events. And so when we're talking about different types of trauma, an incident-specific trauma we might refer to as a big T. It was that one single event that changed the person's life. When we talk about a series of traumatic events that affected a person's well-being, we might refer to those as little T's. There is also a difference between like a weather traumatic event that is shared in a community versus something that happens to an individual, which makes the trauma even more threatening to that person's well-being. When we respond to stress and trauma, we all have different sets of tools. We have different physical resiliency and well-being. We might have psychological tools such as ways to reframe a threat, to quickly make decisions and protect ourselves from further danger. And we might have environmental supports like people to talk to and help us process. So these tools that each individual has can help them in how they react to traumatic events. We know not everyone responds the same. It's so important to not judge a person's trauma, because what one person experiences by going through trauma might lead them to respond to life with a really cautious attitude. But another person experiencing that same type of trauma might begin to respond to life with a reckless attitude. So, you know, you don't have to be a mental health professional to be supportive to loved ones who have gone through terrible situations, exposures to trauma. What they need is some respect, sometimes some space, you know, a way to approach someone that you know has gone through a terrible experience would be to say, I don't know what you're going through right now, but I care about you, and I'm here if you want to talk about anything. I heard of some friends who made up this plan to let each other know when they needed a higher level of support. Because people who have gone through trauma are often really reluctant to talk about it. And people don't have an easy time asking for help. So one person might text you to say, hey, what's going on? And what you don't know is that they're thinking, I'm in crisis, I have a lot of mental distress, and I don't know how to ask for support, so I'm just asking, what are you doing? Sometimes people might feel like, I don't want to burden them with what's going on in me. If you're the person who is experiencing a reaction to their trauma, you know, a way to figure out who is ready and willing to give you support would be to tell someone. I've been through a traumatic event and I wonder if you're open to talking about it with me. So that we give them the opportunity to say, no, I'm not in a good space, man, to talk about trauma. And that's okay if they do, because they need to take care of their mind. But you might be surprised if someone says, sure, I've got time for you. So going back to that 8-minute conversation idea, I saw this on Facebook. And the friends agreed that if they really needed help, instead of saying, hey, what are you doing? They're going to say, do you have 8 minutes to talk with me? So what I read was that it takes 8 minutes to give support and change someone's life. A person might be really on the edge and not sure if they're going to make it. They may even have self-harm or suicidal thoughts. And we need to encourage people to talk about it, to know that there's some safe spaces for you to talk about your real feelings. And if a friend tells us that they're thinking about suicide, then it's important for us to act. You know, if it's a child who has said something like this, getting help from their parents. But always for sure, if a person has threatened themselves, they need a safety net. They need friends or family who can hang out with them. And if they don't have those kinds of resources, they might need professional help. Maybe that might be calling a crisis line or getting into therapy. And if it's real severe, a person might have to go in the hospital into inpatient care to keep themselves safe from harm and to access the level of care that they need to stabilize themselves. We really need to work to reduce those feelings of shame when people access mental health services. What I really wish is that we treated mental health like physical health, so that if a person was very distressed, they can easily call in a sick day because they're having mental health issues. You know, if you're the person in that real bad place, maybe it's a good idea to call in sick and have a plan for a self-care day or spending time with someone that is supportive to you. When we are exposed to trauma, our nervous system engages to react to the threat that's going on. So our adrenaline system gets going and our blood gets pumping, our muscles get tight, and we're ready to respond to the threat. Whether that experience is going to be that fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, our body is ready to handle the trauma that's coming. And so this is an intense experience, and hopefully that tension is getting our brain ready to figure out how to respond. But sometimes someone's response might be to freeze or fawn. So again, let's make sure we don't pass judgment on the way somebody responded to their trauma. When someone has the opportunity to get support and talk about what has gone on, then they're less likely to continue to carry that anxiety and fear of the trauma happening again. For some people, they get stuck in that fear response. The brain and body had become overwhelmed, and it is still holding on to that threat, fearing that the traumatic event will repeat itself. And this chemical change inside of a person and an inability to let it go leads to behavioral and mental health problems. For some people, after a trauma has happened, they might develop post-traumatic stress disorder, which includes intrusive thoughts about the traumatic event. Some people call these flashbacks. There may be efforts to avoid situations or people that are similar to their trauma. They may be easily startled, have difficulty sleeping, including nightmares for some people, emotional numbing, agitation, anger, anxiety, and avoidance of closeness or talking about their trauma. I encourage you, if you have this trauma stuck in you, please consider therapy. There are so many great therapists out there who want to give support, who are especially trained in dealing with trauma. Talk therapy is helpful, but coping, mindfulness, tapping, brain-based therapies like EMDR, which involves eye movements, desensitization and reprocessing, and brain spotting. Both of these are brain-based therapies that I'm trained in because for me, it's really important that I develop the best tools I can to help people with trauma. Because each trauma experience is very unique, a person can have a hard time finding the right match in a therapist. So give it a chance. If you encounter something and someone and it doesn't feel like the right fit, it's okay to try someone else because working with the right therapist and having that strong trust foundation is really important to the success of your therapy. Some people who have post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD are really reluctant to seek therapy. They have built up their defenses. They feel like they are strong against their past trauma and they have let it go when often they haven't. And they feel like going into therapy is going to break down their defenses and make them look at the trauma and risk emotional weakness or a threatening level of reactivity themselves. However, the truth is, people with PTSD are still thinking about their trauma. They are stuck back in the pain of that injury. And you won't lose your edge. Your edge comes from your life experiences, your intelligence, your wisdom, all the things that help you make good decisions. And the trauma from the past, it's just garbage getting in the way. You know, it makes it hard to trust people. It makes emotional intimacy difficult. It can be hard to be vulnerable in relationships. And these are important human experiences. I mean, these things enhance our life experiences. Being able to have successful interactions with others is really important to our well-being. I mean, you don't have to be a social butterfly, but we also don't want it to be that a person lives not being able to trust anyone. I'd like to talk about childhood trauma. When children experience early life abuse and neglect, medical emergencies, separation from parents, we know that these things can change a child's trajectory because of the way they can interfere with their development. We know that some of that development begins in utero, and so our hope is that pregnant women get great physical, medical, emotional, spiritual care and support during their pregnancy so that they're in good physical and mental health and the baby gets to have that same chemical experience. If a mother is not in a safe situation, if she's experiencing anxiety, addiction, abuse, then the unborn baby experiences those things too. And so these things create two different babies. One baby that is looking forward to being out in the world, and the world sounds like a pretty good place to them. And another baby who might be anxious, might feel like the world might not be a good place. So we know that already their development is beginning to be impacted. When they have early life experiences where their needs are met, when they have parents that they are attuned to, who can easily meet their needs for love, guidance, attention, then these children are better prepared for their childhood school experiences, that social, emotional, academic, spiritual development that leads to them being able to take advantages that enhance their life. If a baby does not have these needs met, if neglect happens, if a child infant is not responded to when they cry, these things start to tell the baby that the world is not a safe place and your needs might not always be met. If they're exposed to violence, if they're exposed to threat, a lack of stimulation, unmet needs for warmth, food, being dry, playing, then the baby does not develop as easily, and we might have a baby that's delayed. And when school comes around, that child doesn't have the same advantage as the healthy baby because they may be socially behind. They may not have learned how to manage their emotions from their parents or understand how to appropriately get their needs met. So the ACEs study looks at some adverse experiences that some children might experience. It could be divorce, death, not getting their needs met, abuse, addiction, incarceration. So there are 10 different factors that they look at. And the more of those factors a child experiences, the greater accuracy there is in predicting difficult adult lives. Things like delinquency, substance abuse, unplanned pregnancies, sexually transmitted diseases, smoking, substance abuse. And then there are a lot of physical health issues that it's such a blow to a person's entire life to have those early life abuse and neglect experiences that we need to have a special name for it, and that's complex trauma. And so, as you can see, I can get a little charged about it because I don't think people understand or appreciate how important early life is as a foundation for a person's entire life. So as we're healing, we may begin to look backwards in our life and question if our needs were met or if we faced any traumas that might have interfered with our development. To be sure, I want us to keep track of the purpose of looking backwards at our childhood is not to place blame or judge our parental situation. It is trying to understand who we are, where we came from. And another interesting topic is intergenerational trauma. And, you know, with that situation, previous generations, perhaps our grandparents, went through traumatic events that changed who they were as people, and it affected their parenting. And so our parents were parented by people who had experienced terrible things, and it changed them. And that affects how they parent us, how they take care of themselves, all the different things they learned. So looking back generations, also, we're not looking to blame. We're looking for understanding because, as we've been saying, knowledge is the key to empowering ourselves to find our best self, to be able to look inward and question where do we come from? How do we become the way we are? Can be a healthy path to living our lives more intentionally. I really love and incorporate into my life mindfulness practices. This is the practice of being fully present in every moment and being aware of your surroundings, being able to calm yourself and know what's going on with yourself. I love meditation. And I think meditation is a key in developing mindfulness. I really love an app called Insight Timer. So you can check it out. There's a whole bunch of meditations in there. It's not that hard to learn to meditate. And listening to a recorded meditation might be what works best for you. For other people, sitting in silence is the path that clears their mind. This gives our brain a pause. It teaches us to be able to calm ourselves in stressful situations so that we have that opportunity to take a breath before we react and be more intentional about how we're going to respond. Meditation is great for people who have experienced trauma. You know, their brains have that pain and fear and excitement that is hard to calm down, and meditation is a path to get there. Be patient with yourself. Try meditating for 2 minutes a day or 5 minutes a day and increase as you feel like it's showing some work for you. So as I said in the beginning of the podcast, 25 minutes does not give us a time to have a full understanding of trauma. What we know is that trauma is when a person feels very, very threatened. Maybe their life, their livelihood, their family is threatened, and they don't have an ability to respond. They may become overwhelmed. And what we know is having a healthy body and mind helps us to handle those traumas. Having access to support, safety, guidance, and sometimes professional help can make it so that we do not go on to develop post-traumatic stress disorder. But also we know that some people will develop PTSD, and help is available. And I encourage you to definitely do things to examine yourself and develop good self-care. Mindfulness, so important. But think about professional help too, especially if it's interfering with your happiness. Thank you for being part of Caterpillar Nation. This is Jill Kimball. A podcast can never take the place of professional mental health services. If you are in crisis, please text 988 or call 1-800-273-TALK. Check out my website, CaterpillarNation.com, and my new Facebook group, Caterpillar Nation 2024. If you like what you heard, please follow, share, rate, and review. Remember, the journey to health begins with knowledge. Stay informed, stay empowered. Until next time, keep learning and growing. Take care.